So I know a lot of folks got a lot of things going on. So if I was to ask you a question kind of like this, do you have a sense of peace right now? How about at 3 a.m? Because that's kind of the interesting question, right? Is if you walk to someone and go, hey, do you kind of generally have a sense of wellness or do you have a sense of peace? Yeah, you'll get something like, well, you know, it's not perfect, but sure, right? But we saw what just happened there. I go, okay, well, let me ask you something specific. Like, when you go to bed at night, do you fall right asleep? Or do you kind of have to sort out all those things that are just spinning, man, just spinning through? You know, or maybe you're a person who can fall asleep, but it's that 3 o'clock jolt, boom. And all the things, and your brain is running before you even get there, sort of thing. I knew someone who actually went through a difficult period, and they woke up in the middle of the night with their fingers already tingling because their blood pressure was so high, because they were freaked before they even woke up. You know, and there are certainly really difficult times in our lives, but the question is that how do we deal with difficulties, right? Because so often we're worried about so many things, but something that's actually even kind of becoming more common is what's called free-floating anxiety. It's a real term. You're freaked out, and you don't even know why. You just have that anxiety inside of you all the time. You know, and we certainly live in a time of high anxiety, I think this is good news. Maybe it's not good news. If you're experiencing anxiety, you're not the only one. Right, we all go through periods of anxiety. Many of us go through very long periods of anxiety. And what I think what we find is that we're missing something. That we're missing peace. That we aren't able to have this kind of sense of peace in our lives. So what I'd like to do, kind of starting today and into a few weeks ahead, is talk about that. Like, what is it that's causing us to lose our peace? But maybe even more importantly, how do we have a greater sense of peace? How do we have a greater sense of being okay, being well? Because we know that personal wellness, personal well-being is at an all-time low. You know, and I've talked about a lot of things that cause that. You know, I've gone at length on some of these. Just brief reminders in case you've forgotten. Social media, do less of it. Right, whether you're an old-timer on Facebook, yeah, Facebook is old-timer stuff now, in case you were wondering. And there are far newer things as well, and they're all, I don't want to say they're all bad. They have bad elements. The bad seems to float to the top. They make more money if the bad floats to the top, in case you were wondering. Right, so they're kind of motivated to make you see the bad stuff. But you're like, I don't do social media. I'm better. But do you watch cable news? Because just so you know, cable news makes more money if they upset you as well. And not just the other side. Right? There's all that kind of stuff. And there's this weird thing that's to me it's very weird, is that politics has become too important. I mean, elections matter. Who holds office matters. Absolutely. But politics was supposed to support our lives. So politics has become our lives. There are people who can't get along with another, people who will not go to the same church because somebody votes different to them. That is wrong. Jesus is Lord. Everything else is temporary. And we want to understand that and embrace that. I just kind of blew my sermon for next week. Sorry. Anyway, so so the thing is that we want to think about this idea of that, yes, you know, high anxiety is part of modern life. So what do we do? How do we deal with that? Well, like everything, people don't agree. Right? In fact, kind of a prevailing mindset on how to deal with our anxiety is to start to disengage from life, right? To kind of start to isolate, to pull away, right? To create an environment that limits your interactions with other people, or at least just limit your interactions to other people who are just like you, because you're already right. So you might as well surround yourself with other people who are just as right as you are, right? But because if I do that, I feel like I might have kind of, I could have total control over my life then. If I could just withdraw and kind of keep everything on the outside. That if I could kind of create this this idea of social bubble wrap. I'll just wrap myself up in it and I won't feel things and I won't see things anymore. Because all of my stressors are from external sources, right? So if I can just keep myself away from those external sources, then I'll be okay, right? And this is a viewpoint that's growing very rapidly. And in fact, it's probably growing the fastest on people who are relatively young, particularly among young men. But it is not unique to young men. Across all age brackets, across genders, people are isolating more and more. People are connecting only with people who they think are just like him. And so look around. Clearly it's working, right? Because anxiety's lower now, right? Of course not. And obviously it doesn't work. How do I know it doesn't work? Because if people are isolating more than they ever have, and anxiety is higher than it's ever been, it's not working. And there's other data we can use too, right? Is that the number of scripts, prescriptions that are written for anxiety medications is continually growing, right? Addictions are off the walls, man, off the charts. And not just chemical. You can gamble from your phone now. That is a dangerous thing. And these are all addictive behaviors. And there's also this something called deaths of despair. That in certain age groups, people's lifespans are getting shorter due primarily to what are called deaths of despair. Now, the obvious death of despair is when someone dies by suicide, but also deaths related to addiction, drug use, young people dying from liver failure because of despair. Now, I've done an awesome job in giving you lots of evidence. Did you need any of that evidence to know what I started with was true? All you do is you look around. Listen. It's all there. So there's an issue. So what are we going to do? Right? Because odds are that you are probably a more stressed person now than you were a few decades ago. I mean, you may have had moments where things were up or down. But for most of us, our base stress level is higher than it once was. And so if we're getting more stressed, so if people are stressing us, circumstances are stressing us, our experiences are stressing us, the answer must be to do what? Withdraw, isolate. Oh, wait. We already said that doesn't work. So what do we do? Is there no answer? Has life become hopeless? Well, I don't believe so. I think there are a number of answers to deal with that. If I didn't, I wouldn't have anything left to say, by the way. Right? So what do we do? Right? What do we do? Because one of the things that we have to really be careful about, this idea of isolation and withdrawing, you know, I get it. Right? I get it. That it is nice to pull back. And honestly, it's good to pull back for short times. You know, we should all have some quiet time in our lives. You know, I get up at 4:45 in the morning just because that gives me like 45 minutes just to kind of pray, read, just kind of have a cat bump me in the head while I'm kneeling on the floor sort of thing, you know? But it gives me that time where nothing has started yet, right? So those sort of kind of pulling back is good. But if you're dealing with anxiety, pulling back, isolating yourself becomes this kind of self-propelling rocket, right? It's just like the perpetual motion machine that if we start to pull back and just be alone, as tempting as it might be, in general, we're not going to do very well. So, what's going on? Because anxiety's not brand new, right? It's worse now, but it's not brand new. You know, I'll be 60 next year, right? So I'm almost 60 years old. Some of you are older, some of you are younger. But for those of us who are over 35 years old, do you remember a time when there was no internet? Of course you do, right? Do you remember a time before cable news, before Ted Turner turned the world on his head sort of thing? Right? Do you remember a time when their politics were just kind of this thing you did once every 4 years? Not even every two, right? Most people voted every four. Life, I would argue aspects of life were better then. But I'm sure you still had anxiety in your life. Right? Because there are lots of things that create anxiety, right? There are health issues, of course, create anxiety. We have financial struggles that can create anxiety, right? There's all kinds of things that can create anxiety. I mean, I've spent most of my life overcommitted to things, right? Overcommitting myself to stuff. And you know what? That creates anxiety for me. So it seems that anxiety is tied to life, that it's always been the case. So why is it so much worse now? Because again, we can point to things like politics and the internet and cable news, but we're only watching it because somehow we want it, whether we think so or not. And so why has all of that happened? I have a theory. Diminished community. That people do not live in community the same way anymore. That we don't connect with the community around us. Honestly, even within churches, we don't really connect as a community the same way. Right? And I think that's a really important point. And that's kind of where I want to spend the rest of the time I have this morning, is that on this issue of community, like why does community matter? Well, I think we were built for it. I truly do. Now go back to the oldest narrative in the Bible, that God created Adam and Adam was alone. He needed someone. It says that he needed a helper. And before we say that helper means that a woman is less than a man, do you know who else God describes as a helper? Himself. God describes himself as a helper. Therefore, that we were built to be connected to other people. Yes, our relationship, our personal relationship, our spousal relationships are a deeper sense, but we are built to be connected to one another. And by not staying connected to one another, we are setting ourselves up, I think, for pain, for a life that is not as healthy and whole as it could be. So what I want to do this morning is actually walk through a few different things the Apostle Paul has written that talks about this idea of community and what it should look like and what it should be like. Now, one of the things the Apostle Paul does is he describes being in community, particularly Christian community or kind of a church community, as being like a physical body, right? I made a kind of a reference to this kind of in passing a couple weeks ago, right? But here's what Paul says about being in community. He says, "For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others." You know, and it's kind of pretty easy to picture this as a body, right? It's like our legs are super strong relative to our overall bodies, but if all that we have was a pile of legs, even if they could animate, first that'd be really weird, right? But it wouldn't be particularly functional. You know, and if you've ever watched The Addams Family with the hand crawling along, again, creepy, but limited function, right? But all the things, we'd have legs, arms, but when you put it together into a body, a whole body, from our brain to our eyes to our arms to our legs, the effectiveness and the health of the whole far exceeds the sum of the health of the individual parts. That's what we're meant to do. That's what we're meant to be, is to be in community in that same way. And you think about that. Any time you were to take one of those body parts, again, assuming it's not creepy and assuming it would actually live, and kind of put it off on its own, it still has value, but it's choosing to be less. It's choosing to be isolated. You know what it's doing? It's choosing to be incomplete. And that's what we face as individuals. Is that certainly we want to have our individuality. Every one of you have very distinct and meaningful, purposeful value. But we can't all do the things that others can do. Right? And so when we come together, we are more complete. We are more. That we are healthier with one another. I mean, imagine if when my thumb was bleeding all over the place and I had to use my foot to put this Band-Aid on. It wouldn't look as good as it does right now. Right? Right, but it wasn't very functional. Actually, my wife put my Band-Aid on, just to be clear. I can't do that myself. I'm alone. But the point is that we want to recognize that we're losing out when we don't connect with one another. Because, again, it goes back to this idea that if we are isolating or we are pulling away, we get trapped in our own heads. Right? That's what happens to us. And I think that's a big part of where we are now. And I can kind of point that out to you. That research shows that when people isolate, they start to feel overwhelmed more easily, that they tend to increase their sense of victimhood. They tend to see the world as me versus them or as us versus them. As you look around the world today, do you see an increased sense of victimhood? Do you see an increased sense of us versus them thinking? Because community has become broken. And I think that what we need to understand is that as Christians, as followers of Jesus Christ, that we are the ones who are responsible for creating community. I'm not saying that we're the only ones who can. There are lots of wonderful people out there who do not go to church, who are great community builders. But we have a real responsibility. The Apostle Paul puts it like this. He says, share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. And so Paul has made it very clear that as a Christian, as a Jesus follower, that we are to be engaged in one another's lives so that anyone who is part of a faith community of Christ should not feel alone when things are difficult, should not feel that they have to carry the burden by themselves. That is actually one of the ways that we honor God by doing those things. He talks about this kind of the law of Christ, right? Jesus said, love God, love others. But how do you describe loving others? Love others as I have loved you. He invested in our lives. He cared about the people around him. He made a difference in the lives of the people around him. We are to do that for one another. That's what our lives should look like as a Christian community. And Paul writes about this idea a lot. Now, we were just looking at the letter to a church in Galatia, which is actually the oldest letter from Paul we have, right around the year 50, sort of thing, somewhere between year 48 and 52. But he wrote about this a lot. And later in the book of Romans, which he would write somewhere between 6 and 10 years later, he's developed the idea much more. And he actually really reinforces this point of community and caring for one another. Because in the letter to the Romans, he says, therefore accept each other just as Christ has accepted you, so that God will be given glory. Now we hear that, well, yeah, I should be accepting. But what that really means, what that looks like when we walk it out, is that we connect with people who aren't just like us. We connect with and accept people who vote for the other party. Oh no. That's got to be heathen, right? Straight up, right? Of course not, right? Politics should be second to your relationship with Jesus. Politics should be second to your relationship with other people. Right? But we should accept people who are different from us. Why? Because a body functions well when the parts are diverse. We should have different age groups. We should have different political views. Right? We should have different views, different activities, different behaviors. And in that, we need to accept one another. It doesn't mean you have to agree. Right? I have my own political views. And you all think they're the same as yours. Which means I'm doing it right, right? Because that's not the most important thing in my life. I'm not saying the issues aren't important, but you're more important to me. If I start spouting off my political views, I will instantly cut a bunch of you off. And that'd be the worst thing I could possibly do. You should throw me out of here if I do that. Because I'm failing you if I do that. And you know what? We fail one another if we do that. Your views are important. You should stand by what you believe in, but they are not more important than the person next to you. Not more important than the person next to you. And Paul makes this really clear as he talks about this idea of building community. Is he talking about just building a community of Christians? Are we meant as Christians to be the insiders and everyone else is the outsiders? You know, kind of this insular idea that we kind of wall ourselves off from the rest of the world, that we're a special community that doesn't have to worry about the community around us. Let's see what he says. As he continues this point in his letter, he says, remember that Christ came as a servant to the Jews to show that God is true to the promises he made to their ancestors. So his first point here is that, yes, Jesus came to those who already knew God. That is definitely what he did. He was coming to the people of Israel. But was that all he did? Is that all Jesus came to do? Well, Paul wants to make it really clear that that is not the case. Because immediately after this, he says, Jesus also came so that the Gentiles might give glory to God for his mercies to them. Now, just in case you're wondering, unless you were born into a Jewish family, you are a Gentile. I'm a Gentile. It's everybody who's not Jewish. All right, so we're Gentiles. So we're grateful that Jesus came for the Gentiles as well. But Paul is making a larger point in that. That the kingdom of Christ was meant to be an ever-expanding community. And you and I are the representative of Christ today. Therefore, we are meant to be an ever-expanding community. We are meant to be a community that reaches out. Right? We should be a community that cares for one another, but we should also be a community that reaches out. That I truly believe that as the community of Christ, we are meant to be community builders. We are meant to be community builders. That we build a community together here, caring for each other as brothers and sisters. But we are also meant to go out and build community around us, to reach the people who are not here. Because how do we build an expanding community if we don't expand, if we don't reach out, if we don't go out to where people are? Right? That is what we're called to do. Now, I've talked a bunch about anxiety. That was kind of my whole lead-in. And now you're probably all anxious, even if you weren't when you got here. You're anxious now. Like, oh, yeah, there is all that stuff I should be worried about. Hopefully not. Right? But we know that anxiety is rising. We've covered that. We know it's rising even more in younger generations. We've covered that. And we know that it's actually especially high in what's referred to as Gen Z. Someone who's Gen Z is currently about 12 to 28 years old. Somewhere 27 years, 12 to 27 years old. So kind of right in that range. And we know that anxiety is especially high among them. But there's a researcher, a guy named John Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. He's a PhD, he's a behavioral psychologist, who works for NYU's, the Stern School of Business, the business school in NYU. And he researches behavior. And one of the areas that he's looked into very closely is this issue of anxiety, especially as it relates to Gen Z. So he's put a lot of work there. And what was interesting is that if you look at his research, and you can look him up, he talks about this a lot, he writes about it. When he was doing his research and he started looking at the data, he started to notice that some people had higher anxiety than others, that overall everyone's more anxious than they were a few years ago, but some were doing better. And to his surprise, what he discovered was the folks who had a faith life and lived out a religious tradition had lower anxiety than those who don't. Be clear, I didn't say they have no anxiety. Right? A 20-year-old today is more anxious than a 20-year-old was 40 years ago. That's still true. But those who have a faith life and a religious tradition that they follow have lower anxiety than those who don't. Now, of course, our natural thought might be, well, that's just his own personal bias, right? He's probably a religious guy, and so his own religious viewpoint overlaid that. He's atheist. He doesn't even believe in God. He will outright admit that faith in God and practicing your faith gives you a better quality of life, a lower sense of anxiety, even though he doesn't believe it himself. His argument is we evolved to have it. We don't need to disagree on how we got here. Right? Although I disagree with how we got here, I believe we are created for that. The key is that it makes a difference. So I want to ask you to take a second and think about your family. Are your kids carrying more anxiety than you would like? Are your grandkids carrying more anxiety than you would like? Great-grandkids, whatever it might be. What can you do? Well, according to the research, invite them to come with you to church. Right? Walk with them, help them to develop a faith life. Are your neighbors, are your friends, are your siblings, your cousins, do you see them having higher anxiety? You want to make a difference in their lives. Invite them to join you in church. Walk with them, help them to develop a faith life. Now, I'm sure you're sitting there looking at me going, you're all looking at me politely, but you're like, duh, I haven't done that. Yeah, I wanted my kids not to come to church with me today. You've tried, right? So what works? What works? Well, I'll tell you what the Apostle Paul tells us he did. Because he is one of the, you know, arguably the most successful evangelists in history, right? You know, prior to multimedia, you know, Billy Graham's done pretty well once he had cameras and stuff. But, you know, before that, he was incredible. And here's what Paul says. I dare not boast about anything except what Christ has done through me, bringing the Gentiles to God by my message and by the way I worked among them. So he's saying the people came to know Jesus because of what he said, but what did he also do? He worked among them. They came to know Jesus by what he said, but also because of what he did. And so what Paul's telling us is that if we want to make a difference, he's going to say, well, I'll tell you how I made a difference, how Paul made a difference. I lived among people. I worked with them. I did things with them. The thing that's important to us to understand is that we are intended to share the gospel. If you've put your faith in Jesus Christ, every one of us here are intended to share the gospel. And that includes talking some. But what we should do far more loudly, because it speaks far more loudly, is do. Right? The things we do are what actually sends the message of the gospel, right? That if you want to share the good news of Jesus Christ, you do it by what you do. It's how you treat one another as a church family and being involved in each other's lives and walking with each other. That part matters. It also matters what we do to the community and in the community around us and to reach the people around us. That we should be a community of believers who care for one another, and we should be a community of believers who reach out into our community to make a difference. And as Paul says that, he continues, and he says something that I just think is so important. He goes on to say, they, in other words, those who came to believe, they were convinced by the power of miraculous signs and wonders and by the power of God's Spirit. In this way, I have fully presented the good news of Christ from Jerusalem all the way, I'm going to blow it, Illyricum, all the way to Illyricum. Now, Illyricum is right by Italy. So he's saying that he personally reached people from the Middle East down to Italy. And he says he did it by miraculous signs and wonders. And you're like, well, okay, well, when I can do miracles, I'll head right on out there. But I'm going to argue that you do miracles. I will tell you that every Tuesday morning, when a person or a family who doesn't have enough food walks to the back door of this church and receives food from people who do not know them with no restrictions, that's a miracle. That's a miracle. That's miraculous that happens. Right? Every time you make a difference and it's someone in your neighborhood, a kid in your neighborhood, you reach out to help them, even though you don't know them, that's a miracle. When people see that happening, people who are not believers see that happen time and time again, serving people and caring for people, caring for one another, caring for and reaching out to those people who are in need, expecting nothing in return, they're seeing a miracle. That is a sign. That is a wonder. When we do those sort of things, we are doing the miraculous. My friends, our lives are filled with opportunities to share the gospel, right? To share the good news of Christ. And we get so focused on the things we think we're supposed to say. What changes things is what we do, right? That we are meant to be community builders. So, and I will tell you that if you want to have less anxiety in your life, become a community builder. Make it a point to connect with the people next to you. Because we think that sometimes that if I can be separate from other people's pain, then I'll have less pain. But the reality is that when we walk with people in their pain, in their difficulty, we develop compassion. We develop awareness. We develop gratitude for the things that we have. When we serve people who don't have as much, who may not have anything, we develop gratitude and compassion. And that gives us a greater sense of peace. You know that there's this song by Jason Mraz, I spent too much time looking at my tongue in the mirror. And the line is, other words, oh, my throat's kind of sore. I don't feel good. If we just focus on ourselves, we focus on our ailments. But when we look past ourselves to caring for people, caring for one another, serving each other, we break free of our ailments and we start to find peace and meanings in our lives, meaning in our lives. So I'll finish up with this point, that when you accepted Christ, Christ made you free. You have freedom, absolute freedom in Christ. So what are you going to do with your freedom? How do you want to live out your freedom? Paul has a suggestion. He says, my friends, you were chosen to be free, so don't use your freedom as an excuse to do anything you want. Use it as an opportunity to serve each other with love. All the law says can be summed up in the command to love others as much as you love yourself. Love others as I have loved you. When Jesus says, love others as I have loved you, what he's saying is to look at his love for us, look at your self-interest, your self-concern, and put that out to other people. That's the invitation of our freedom. That when we embrace our freedom to make a difference, to connect to one another, that frees us from our anxiety, but it also frees those around us from their anxiety. And in that, we find life. That's the gift that we are offered as followers of Jesus.